Murray said, to no one in particular. Ben scowled at Misha around his mouth full of marshmallows.
Just because you let your network run wild, he mumbled.
Oh, you mean have fun? Thanks, my network is the most fun, and everyone knows it.
Oh, give me a... Enough, said Noriko, standing up and banging on the table, the hoops in her ears swinging.
It's meeting time, people. The other council members fell silent. Ben was still glowering. Murray and Misha grinned.
Noriko sat back down and turned her sunglasses on me.
So, yes, here we are. And Ben, seriously, we can let the leadership rule slide this one time.
Ben shook his head and scribbled something on his clipboard.
You'll do fine for talking business, Maggie Hetzker. Welcome to the hub.
Thanks, I said.
Deep breath, Maggie. Reclaim your cool.
What's the hub?
This place. Here, where you are. The central pillow fort for all of North America. This is where the regional networks meet up. The same way your fort is where all your links meet.
It is? Wait, said Ben, holding up a hand. You hadn't figured that out yet? About your very own forts?
No.
Wow.
The corners of his mouth curled.
That should be obvious, even to a complete amateur like you.
Oof, what was this kid's problem?
Well, it's not, I said.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
And that's totally okay,
said Murray, lobbing a marshmallow at Ben's head. Misha leaned forward.
Maybe I can help, Maggie Hitzker. Try this. Close your eyes. No, really.
Okay, take a deep breath. Now imagine you're a dolphin. You are swimming through ancient seas. You are bathed in rainbows and starlight. Everything is beautiful. A purple unicorn swims by, leaving a trail of shimmering hearts. To your right is a pink and yellow panda. The midnight blue ocean.
Misha, I heard Noriko say. I opened my eyes. Murray was shaking with silent laughter, and the others all had wide grins, even Carolina.
Ha-ha, said Ben. You got Lisa franked.
Wow, these kids were hilarious.
Sorry, said Misha. It was just too perfect.
For real now, though, Maggie Hitzker. Picture your network for me, please.
Okay, so where did the very first link from your original pillow fort lead, as far as you know?
To Abby's, I said promptly, because it had.
I saw Noriko and Murray throw each other a look across the table, but Misha kept going.
Okay, good, she said. And where did the second link go?
Uncle Joe's.
Cool. Now, think about this.
Do those other two forts connect to each other?
Without going through your fort on the way?
I thought.
The answer is no, said Ben.
Murray shushed him. Well, they might, I said, frowning. We haven't checked the pillows from the other forts yet. They could maybe link to...
They don't, Ben interrupted. They really don't. Trust us, we're the experts here.
Murray and Misha glared at him. But I was too distracted to care about Ben's rudeness. If what they were saying was true, and the forts in my network only linked up through Fort McForterson, then everything back home literally revolved around me. I was the center. I was the hub of Camp Pillow Fort.
Huh. I liked that.
Good. Thank you, Misha, said Noriko. I think she's got it. And now that that's all clear... The main business we need to discuss, Maggie Hetzker, is you and your friend joining the National Alliance. Your network is still small, but it's developed unusually quickly, and it's time for you to step up and get with the Pillow Fort program. You've already come close to making some major mistakes, like oversharing with that uncle of yours for a start, and we can't let you keep bumbling around like kindergartners anymore.
The thought suddenly flashed through my mind that maybe this was all a very bizarre dream, and any second now I would wake up in Fort Comfy feeling downright silly.
I pinched the inside of my wrist and winced.
Nope, not a dream.
Hang on, I said as Noriko's speech hit home.
How could you know we almost said too much to Uncle Joe? You weren't even there.
The answer smacked me in the face like a sofa cushion.
Wait, have you been spying on us?
The Council and Alliance monitor all linked fort activity, said Ben, patting his clipboard.
For your own protection and for ours.
And you were actually up there in Alaska the whole time? We had Nefafa agents listening from inside what you now call Fort Orpheus, yes, said Noriko. She held up a hand while I spluttered.
Look, our first duty here is to protect our own networks. That's what this entire meeting is about. There's nothing more dangerous than a splinter group of uninitiated kids running amok and drawing the attention of the authorities.
Authorities? I said. Noriko was starting to sound a lot more like Ben.
What authorities?
Parents.
And teachers. And lawyers.
They were all facing me. They looked deadly serious. Not even Murray was smiling now.
Okay, I said. Right. And you brought me here to...
To bring you into line, said Noriko. We show you the way things work.
Ben gave a satisfied nod.
And teach you the rules. Then you either join us and start playing along, or we take further steps.
Further steps? I repeated. That sounded like a threat. What does that mean? And why do I have to follow your rules? Noriko leaned back in her chair.
How long have you and your friend been aware of the links, Maggie Hetzker?
I thought. A little over a day, I guess. Was that really all? It already felt like so much longer.
And you're probably pretty excited about what you'll be able to do with them in a week,
or even a month from now, right? I nodded. If Abby and I weren't playing nightly Galactic Conquest games in the downtown library within 2 weeks, it wouldn't be my fault.
Great, said Noriko. Well, just for some perspective. I built my first linked fort and joined the forts of the Eastern Seaboard 5 years ago. Everyone here has just a little more experience with this whole pillow fort world than you do, so you can trust us to know what's best.
5 years? I echoed. I was starting to feel like a parrot. How do you even keep a pillow fort up for that long? Ben snorted, then choked on his mouthful of popcorn. Murray threw another marshmallow at him and gave me an encouraging smile.
There are benefits to joining the Alliance, Maggie Hetzker, said Noriko. A group like this doesn't exist for over 3 centuries without picking up a few tricks.
3 centuries? It was official. I was a parrot. Misha raised her hand. Hey, how about we just skip ahead to the tour? That way all these questions can get answered at once.
Yes,
said Noriko, pointing at Misha. She looked around the table.
Who wants to give the tour and standard history lesson?
Ooh, me!
Murray threw his hand in the air. I'll do it! Misha put a hand over her mouth to cover her smile. Ben held up his pen.
Point of order? Newcomers aren't supposed to learn the history of Nefafa until they've agreed to the entrance requirements, and this applicant still hasn't done that.
Oh, I don't think a tour will hurt, said Noriko. Besides, we need to talk about the you-know-what before this meeting can go any further. And since I think we can already tell which way Murray's going to vote...
Murray's forehead went pink.
The rest of us can stay here and talk about Maggie behind her back in peace.
Ben scowled, but he didn't object again as Murray got to his feet and led the way down the steps. I followed, then glanced back as everyone around the table began talking at once. Were they really talking about me, like Noriko said? Why? And what were these entrance requirements I was supposed to agree to? They sounded downright ominous.
I turned and hurried after Murray, wondering exactly what sort of adventure I was getting myself into.
8. Sorry about all this, said Murray, pointing to the workers on the ceiling as I caught up to him. We don't usually do introductions on maintenance days, but you all are a bit of a special case.
In what way? I asked.
But before he could answer, there was a shout from the maze to our right. Murray! Murray! Murray, Murray, Murray!
A tall boy with shiny black hair launched himself out of a cluster of forts and wrapped Murray in an enormous hug.
It's been weeks. How's my favorite captain?
Oof, Bobby, how's it going?
Excellent, said the kid.
He locked Murray in another squeeze, then let him go and turned to me, beaming.
Who's your friend? Are you giving it to her? Which network is she in?
Her own, Murray said, catching his breath.
West Coast.
I had no idea what that meant, but the new boy looked very impressed. He held out a hand.
Bobby,
he said, dropping his voice low. Maggie, I said.
Enchanté.
Bobby gave a deep bow as we shook. Show off, Murray said, grinning. He turned to me. Bobby's in my network. He's from Montreal.
Montreal by way of Taiwan,
added Bobby, holding up a finger. He dropped his voice so deep he sounded like a movie preview.
Bobby is a global phenomenon.
Nice, I said, smiling. I'm from Seattle, by way of, Seattle.
Nice, Bobby said. And this is your first visit to the hub?
His already beaming face lit up even more.
Hey, do you want to see the coolest thing ever in the history of the world?
Sure.
Hooray! Captain?
Murray gave a thumbs up, and Bobby led us off the path to a boxy fort made of navy blue sheets decorated with stars. We all ducked inside. It was a neat, simple fort, with matching blue pillows lining the walls, a beanbag chair with a stack of comic books beside it, and twinkle lights strung around the ceiling. Bobby pulled down one of the pillows, set it aside, winked at me using his entire face, and disappeared through the link. I crawled after him, feeling the soft carpet of the fort give way to the bouncy, smooshy squashiness of a deep pile of pillows. A very deep pile of pillows. It was almost pitch black in the new fort, but as my arms sank up to the elbow, I could tell this place would put Fort Comfy to shame.
Where are we?
I whispered, trying to get my feet under me. My elbow knocked against something hard. Ouch, breathed Murray.
Oh, sorry.
I reached out a hand to steady myself, and my fingers brushed a blanket wall, then stopped.
Whoa.
I pressed my whole hand to the fabric. There was a real wall behind it.
Bobby?
I said, reaching out with my other hand. Okay, there was a wall on my other side, too.
Where exactly?
My palm pressed flat just above my head.
Are we?
Coolest thing in the history of the world, or not? If we were boxed in a tiny crawl space or storage tank somewhere, I was getting out right now. A faint light gleamed from the other end of the fort, showing Bobby's broad smile. Seriously, it was like he and Murray were competing for the world's smiliest tour guide award.
Come and see,
he whispered. I squished my way through the pillow pile, keeping a firm mental grip on the exit, and heaved myself up beside him. We were looking out an oval opening, just large enough for one of us to scramble through. Two rows of pale, plasticky nubs curved around the inside, with thick rails of the same material arcing out in front on either side of... Hold on. Those were teeth! And those were tusks! And that meant... I pushed past Bobby and stuck my head through the gap. We were inside a woolly mammoth.
And the woolly mammoth was inside a museum.
Dim lights lit up glass display cases, dioramas, skeletons, and life-size furry models like the one we were snuggled up in. A fancy banner over the wall across from us read, "The Age of the Megafauna." Everything was still. We must have been the only ones in the entire museum. This was spectacular. I craned my neck to see around the mammoth side and found myself face to face with an enormous stuffed moose. Its glass eyes glittered at me from beneath its sweeping antlers. My heart twinged. Abby would have loved to see this. I crawled back inside the mammoth's belly.
"Isn't this the very greatest?"
asked Bobby as my eyes readjusted to the gloom.
"We came here on a class field trip when I was 9, and I wanted to know what was inside all the animals, so I just grabbed a tusk and climbed on in. I got in loads of trouble, but I'm glad I did it. Because as soon as I joined the Northern Alliance, I was able to build a fort right inside Basil here. That's what I named him.
Hi, Basil, I said, patting the wall beside me. But how on earth did you get all these cushions and blankets and everything in here without getting caught?
It must have been a planning nightmare.
This mammoth was literally stuffed with pillows.
I camped out, said Bobby. It was super fun, actually. I brought the starter blanket and pillows in a backpack and hid in the bathroom until everyone was gone for the night, then climbed in here just like I did when I was 9. Once Basil was linked in to my Northern Alliance fort, it was easy to bring the rest of the blankets and pillows in through the link.
Of course. That was brilliant.
So do you all run around the museum at night whenever you want? I asked.
Oh, yeah, Bobby said.
No one in the world knows this museum better than us.
He sat up.
Hey, do you want a tour? I can show you the best exhibits right up close, and we can slide down the marble railings and try on all the sweatshirts in the gift shop and jump in the fountain if you want.
Thanks, Bobby, Murray said.
But we're already doing the new member tour here. And if we don't get a move on, I'll be in trouble for holding up the rest of the council.
Bobby slumped dramatically against the pillow pile.
Fine, he said. But I'm going to go splash in the fountain for a bit. You two have fun!
Thanks for showing me Basil, I said.
It was an honor meeting you, said Bobby.
We shook hands. I got another full-face wink, and Murray and I headed back through the Blue Star Fort to the hub.
So, said Murray as we got to our feet. That's Bobby.
He's great, I said. Is everyone in your network like that?
Oh, no. There's only one Bobby, said Murray. But my network is the most fun of the four. Everyone knows that.
Murray led the way back into the crowded maze of the floor, throwing out waves and greetings, and stopped at the far wall, where a tall red and gold tapestry hung between two mismatched pillows.
What's this? I asked, poking the fabric.
The gold thread shimmered in the light from the chandelier.
How can a tapestry be a link?
It can't, said Murray. The tapestry doors,
he spun in a circle and pointed to 5 other points along the wall,
are just regular doors. The rooms behind them are right here, part of the hub.
Wow, I said, craning my neck to look around at the massive space again.
So where exactly are we?
A fort this size must be hidden inside a stadium or airport or something.
Murray beamed at me.
I asked that same question on my first tour,
he said.
Don't worry. You'll find out in good time, eh?
Come on. He pulled the tapestry aside and waved me through. We stepped into a long, quiet hall lit with hanging lamps. It was super fancy. Gilded mirrors ran along each side, reflecting the polished wood floor and the walls and ceiling of pale sky blue sheets. In front of each mirror was a short marble column with a different pillow on top. The whole place felt like an art museum, and I automatically put my hands behind my back as I leaned forward to read a plaque set under the first pillow, a dingy square with a cross-stitch pattern of daffodils. New York, 1897. Anna Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay, so this is where the tour actually starts, said Murray.
He coughed, grinned, coughed again, and went on in a formal tour guide voice.
As Noriko told you, the story of Nefafa goes back a very long way. This hall is where we preserve and display significant pillows from our pillow fort history, just as other networks around the world preserve theirs.
Wait. There are other pillow fort groups around the world? I said, standing up straight.
Seriously?
Of course. One alliance for each continent except Antarctica. And they all keep their own records and histories. Every pillow in this room is from a North American fort. Well, with one exception.
I whistled.
This was awesome.
Murray slowly led the way forward, giving me time to examine the different pillows on display. Red velvet with white brocade, soft silver corduroy, worn black denim, rough burlap stuffed with straw, canvas painted with galloping horses. I recognize a lot of these names, I said, stopping at a plaque above a plain yellow square. California, 1939.
Norma Jean Mortensen. Later, Marilyn Monroe.
Yup, said Murray.
These pillows are all from former NFAFA members who went on to do great things in the world. Their pillows are here to remind us of what we can do with our lives if we try. Everyone who joins NFAFA dreams of having a pillow here someday.
And that happens if you grow up and do something important?
Exactly. Not that you'll ever get to see it. Adults aren't allowed anywhere near the networks unless there's a life or death emergency. Not even former members. We send a coded message and a nice plaque to people who get accepted, though, so they know. Look, here's someone who got in a bit more recently.
He led me over to a beautiful little pillow quilted in pink and blue roses.
Tennessee, 1955. Aretha Franklin.
Hey, I know who that is, I said. She's a singer. I like her.
Everyone knows who she is, said Murray. And she performed her first concert right here.
In this hall?
In this hall.
I whistled again.
So this pillow is from...
Her first fort, said Murray.
When you age out of the network, which happens when you turn 13, you choose a pillow from your first fort and hand it in to the record keepers. It's stored in the pillow library, and once a year the council goes through the pillows from exactly 50 years before and votes on whether any should get their own column.
What happens if they get voted down? I asked.
Then they're released back into the wild, said Murray.
The wild?
Junk shops, garage sales, that sort of thing.
I gazed up and down the hall. All these people, all these legends had started out as kids with pillow forts, just like me, and gone on to change the world. I looked down at the closest plaque. That could be my name someday. I could have a pillow here on my very own personal column. And years from now, some future kid being led down this hall could stop to read my name and say, "Hey, I've heard of Maggie Hetzger," and be amazed that I had been here too, right where they were standing. I shook my head as the first curl of wind ran through my hair. I had to stay in the present, and there was something nagging at my secret agent senses.
"What did you mean earlier?" I asked. "About every pillow here being from a North American fort except one? What's the one?"
"The next stop on our tour," said Murray.
He led the way to the end of the hall, where a pillow made of green and gold velvet was set into the wall at floor level. It looked faded and fragile, and some big patches of fabric were missing.
"What's so special about this old thing?" I said.
Murray shushed me and leaned down.
Gently, reverently, he pulled the velvet pillow aside and crawled through the link.
I followed on my hands and knees. There was barely enough room to squeeze in, and immediately banged my head on something hard.
Ouch!
I dropped flat, rubbing my skull. "Murray, what is this?"
"Easy," said Murray.
"Stop moving or you'll damage it. Just hold still until I'm out, then come through on your right." I heard shuffling ahead of me, then footsteps. There was a whooshing noise, and a dim light appeared. I slithered awkwardly toward it and emerged, covered in dust, from under what turned out to be a dirty, broken-down sofa the same color as the ancient pillow.
"Whew," I said, brushing myself off. "That was dramatic. Where are we now?"
We were in a small, old-fashioned room. Sunlight streamed through a delicate window high on the wall, lighting up the dust in the air from the velvet curtains Murray had just pulled open. The room looked as if it had once been fancy, with paneled wood walls, a patterned marble floor, and a heavy carved door opposite the window. But it had definitely seen better days. So had the poor sofa. It was battered and worn, with a dust sheet dumped over one end and big chunks of fabric missing from the cushion running across the seat. The frame was sagging on the left side, which explained why I'd cracked my head crawling under it. I looked around for any clues about our exact location, but there was only the sofa, the curtains, and a heavy-looking key hanging on a hook beside the door. I turned to Murray.
"Welcome, Maggie Hetzger,"
Murray said mysteriously,
"to where it all began."
He spread his hands wide.
"Welcome to the Palace of Versailles."
I blinked. "The what of the what now?"
"The Palace of Versailles."
Versailles? That sounds kind of French.
It is French.
Murray reached up and pulled off his silver sunglasses. He looked much younger without them. His eyes were hazel, with very pale lashes.
Weren't you wondering why the sun was already up?
He pointed to the window. We're 9 hours ahead of Seattle, Maggie Hetzker. We're in France.
9. I gaped at him.
We are in France? I pointed at the marble floor. We are in a palace
in France. Right now?
Yup, said Murray.
The world is full of wonders, eh?
I probably shouldn't have been so shocked, seeing as I'd just linked up to Alaska a few hours before. But that was somewhere it was technically possible to drive to.
Linking across the ocean? That was a whole other pile of pillows.
I stared around the dingy room.
A palace? This? I guess it could have been. Not that I'd ever been in one before. Not outside my games, anyway.
Okay, so why are we here? I said.
But just then, a gaggle of grown-up voices rose on the other side of the door, headed our way. Murray's eyes went wide. He held a finger to his lips. I nodded.
The voices stopped right outside the room. One voice rose above the others, a woman speaking in super-fast French. It sounded like she was explaining something, like a tour guide.
The woman switched to English with a heavy French accent, and my suspicions were confirmed.
So, as before, I will repeat for our guests who do not have French. This room is one of the favorite mysteries of Versailles. It is called Le Petit Salon, or The Little Room. It was shut and locked nearly 300 years ago, in the time of Louis XV, and has never been opened since.
There was a murmur from the crowd, and the door handle wiggled as though the tour guide were trying it out. A burst of panic arced through me, but thankfully she was right about it being locked. Someone in the group called out something I couldn't catch.
No, said the woman. No, there is no key. Every key in Versailles has been tried, and it is presumed that the key to this door must have been long ago lost.
My eyes jumped to the key hanging beside the door. I turned to Murray, my eyebrows raised, and pointed at it. He smiled.
This room, the tour guide went on, is believed to have been the favorite playroom of the young prince who would soon become the young king Louis XV. Authorities on the palace history are assuring us there is nothing of value inside, and that it is, in fact, likely to be empty. Of course, some are keeping other, more exciting theories. No one is knowing anything for certain, and with the door locked, the mystery must remain unknown as long as the Palace of Versailles stands.
More murmurs from the crowd, some sounding amused, others puzzled. One distinctly American voice bawled out,
"So why not just bust the door down?"
Several people tittered. The tour guide coughed meaningfully.
"The people of France, monsieur, are believing there are some mysteries that are worth preserving. But now, on!"
She clapped her hands, fell back into rapid-fire French, and led the group of chattering grown-ups away. I turned to Murray.
"Louis XV?"
"Louis XV," said Murray. He became king when he was only 5, and this is where he played when he was allowed to be a kid. But what really makes it special is that this is the home of the first ever linked pillow fort. This sofa? He pointed. In this room? His voice dropped to a whisper. Is the center and source of it all. He paused for effect. Dust motes spun and shimmered through a sunbeam above his head. I couldn't help feeling a little shiver.
Cool, I said.
And you know that how exactly?
Research, said Murray, returning to normal with a grin. Our records aren't perfect, but we know that King Louis was 9 when he got this sofa as a gift from an unknown ambassador. And before you ask, we don't know who. That part is still a total mystery. Louis liked the sofa, and he had it brought here to use in a pillow fort because fun, right? Meanwhile, his best friend, an 11-year-old duchess named Yvette, was building a fort of her own under a sofa in the famous Hall of Mirrors. It sounds like they were playing palaces, which was their version of playing house. Anyway, they swapped pillows as a sort of peace treaty, and next thing you know, Louis was falling through a pillow right into Yvette's fort all the way across Versailles.
Okay, I said. Wait. My head was starting to feel downright spinny with all these names and places. It was like sitting through Abby's talk about Camp Cantaloupe again. Back up. You said you know all this from records. What records? Who has records of what this guy was doing as a kid all those years ago?
Museums, universities, top-secret government offices, said Murray, tapping them off on his fingers. Nefafa kids have snuck into most of them over the years. There are tons of historical mysteries that can only be explained by linked-up pillow forts. And we follow any threads we can looking for evidence. And treasure, too, sometimes. It was actually a former queen of Misha's network who found the How It All Began story when she borrowed Louis's diary from the French National Archives 80 years ago. She had to do some real secret agent work to get in there, but it was worth it. Misha's network runs the Nefafa Archives now, and they still have her notes if you ever want to read more about it.
Oh, I've been doing that kind of secret agent stuff for years, I said casually.
Murray looked very impressed.
Well, you know, mostly in my head, I admitted. But that still counts as practice.
Well, once you're in Nefafa, you can give it a try for real.
I nodded. I still had so many questions.
So, I pushed on.
Louis linked from here to the Hall of Mirrors? And then what happened?
Right. So obviously he and Yvette were pretty excited about their discovery, and they went ahead and...
tested the cucumber casserole out of it, I finished, nodding.
Murray laughed.
Ew.
But yeah, exactly. And soon they figured out how tokens and everything worked, and they added more forts and formed the first real network. At first it was just within Versailles. But then they started linking to other palaces and castles around France, and things really got going. And that's how everything we have today began.
Wow, I said. But hang on. You used a word just now. Tokens. What are tokens?
Tokens? Said Murray. Really? They're the things, socks, books, you know, whatever, taken from a hub fort and put in new forts to make them linkable. The thing that has to stay there. The thing that lets them connect. Tokens.
My eyes slid out of focus as I digested what Murray was saying. Items from the hub forts, like Fort McForderson, being placed in other forts, like Fort Comfy, made those other forts linkable. So that was what had done it. The postcard I'd sent to Uncle Joe. The denim tassel scarf I'd given to Abby.
Oof. It was a good thing I hadn't been handing out stuff left and right all summer. Who knows where Fort McForderson could have gotten linked to without me even knowing.
So, just to be super totally clear, I said, you're saying if I take something, anything, from my pillow fort, which is a hub, and put it in another pillow fort, they'll link up? You're saying that's the whole trick?
Well, yeah. Said Murray. Did you really not know that yet?
I shook my head.
Wow. Murray rubbed the back of his neck. That's really basic. Anyway, ta-da! Now you know how networks get made. But let me finish the story here. It's almost over.
I bowed like Bobby. Murray giggled.
So, he continued. Little King Louis was happy with his network of palace forts, and he had all sorts of adventures and got into all sorts of trouble. But before too long, he grew up and had to start actually acting like a king. On the plus side, he got to tell everyone what to do, but on the downside, he was trapped in his palaces, since kings aren't ever allowed to go off and have adventures. Louis didn't like that. He wanted to see the world. So he sent pillows from this sofa out on all his fastest ships.
To act as tokens, I said, feeling very smart.
Right, said Marie.
But wait, why whole pillows?
Why not something simpler? You said they could be anything, right?
This was the early days, said Marie. The idea of linking across oceans was almost impossible to even imagine. So Louis sent pillows in case his normal everyday tokens, like slippers and candles, couldn't reach that far. His friends on the ships had orders to build pillow forts once they arrived. And when they did, Louis was suddenly able to travel anywhere he wanted. Well, anywhere he could send a ship with a pillow on it. He sent all the first sofa's pillows out, except the seat cushion here. And within a few years, he was able to duck into his fort and run all around the globe while his guards and advisors thought he was just hanging out in here playing games.
That's what Abby's dad always thinks we're doing, I said.
Murray nodded.
It's a long, proud pillow fort tradition. Anyway, eventually it was all just too much for Louis to keep up with. He became a real grown-up, and being king was keeping him super busy. So he locked up the room to keep everything contained until he could figure out a time to come back. But he never did. The people in charge of his forts around the world kept them up just in case. And while everyone was looking the other way, their kids started playing in them instead. Of course, it turned out that kids were a whole lot better at running a pillow fort kingdom than grown-ups. It was the kids who figured out that each pillow was as powerful as the entire first sofa itself. And that even a scrap of fabric from one of them could create a new hub. The pillows got divided into smaller and smaller scraps and pieces and spread around the globe. And soon the first major networks came together. Eventually the Continental Alliances and their councils formed. And that is how, Murray concluded, back in his tour guide voice, we became the legendary society we are today.
He bowed. I had to admit, I was deeply impressed. This was up there with the best spy adventure stories I'd ever imagined. So my fort, I said, and Abby's fort, and Uncle Joe's, and your network, and Nefafa. All of it started right here, right where we're standing? I eyed the place with a lot more respect than I had before. And other kids from around the world come here too? Murray nodded.
Every Continental Alliance's hub has a link to this room. Sometimes we bump into each other. If there's ever a global catastrophe or a crisis, everyone's supposed to meet here and try to solve it, I think.
Wait, you think?
It's never been tried. When World War II began, some of the councils met up, but we don't have records of them being able to do much more than protect this room.
Protect it? From what?
Invaders, grown-ups, anyone who might want to break in. France was occupied during the war, and Versailles was full of foreign commanders and soldiers who were super curious about Le Petit Salon, and not as interested in preserving French mysteries as the locals.
How did the kids protect it? I asked, enthralled.
Standing guard, mostly. There were kids stationed here 24 hours a day. Whenever anyone came near the door, they would cry or laugh or clap their hands and sing counting games in off-key voices.
And the invading soldiers would just run away?
Kids can be very creepy when they want to be, said Murray, putting his sunglasses back on.
I looked around the room, my imagination going into overdrive, and pictured myself standing guard all night in the darkness and dust. How boring. I would have run things much better if this were one of my games. Didn't kids back then have any sense of daring?
They really should have set a trap, I said. And then lured the soldiers in one by one and captured them.
Ah, well, they couldn't have done that.
Why not? Not enough kids?
No, because they couldn't open the door, said Murray.
No one can. Not without smashing it down like your fellow American out there suggested.
I blinked. I looked at the door. I looked at the key hanging right beside it. I looked back at Murray. I felt like there was some important point I was missing. But, okay, I said slowly. We're inside the room, and the key's right there.
Murray gave me a long look from behind his sunglasses.
Unlock it, then, he said.
What? Unlock the door. Seriously, maybe it's time.
Flecks of dust sparkled through the air between us.
You mean it? I said.
Really?
Really.
Slowly, with more than one glance back at Murray to see if he was kidding, I crossed to the door and lifted down the key. It was beautiful up close, a dull silver decorated with oak leaves around a radiating golden sun. It was surprisingly heavy.
Go on,
breathed Murray. I took a deep, slow breath, thinking in a flash of the kind of summer I'd been having only a few days before, waiting by the mailbox for Abby's postcards, moping around in my lonely pillow fort, staring out at the world from my spot up on the roof. Things sure had changed. I exhaled hard and slipped the key into the lock that hadn't been opened in 300 years. It fit. I turned it. The key didn't budge. I tried harder. Nothing. I scrunched up my face and twisted my fingers back and forth until sweat broke out on my palms. But the lock refused to open. My hands fell to my sides.
So now you know, said Murray quietly.
What's going on here? I demanded. What is this?
The real mystery of Le Petit Salon, answered Murray. That key's been there forever, but so far as we know, it's never worked in that door.
Well, what's it for, then?
There are two theories, Murray said. The first is that the key will only unlock the door for a certain person, a chosen one who will uncover the secrets of the origins of the first sofa and bring about a golden age for the world of pillow forts.
I snorted. Pass.
I completely agree, said Murray. It's way too sword in the stone, but some people really believe it. I know for a fact Ben comes in here every now and then to try the key again. He probably hopes he'll become the chosen one if he just keeps at it. I think he's wasting his time, though. I follow the second theory, which makes more sense, but is much more frustrating.
What is it?
That the key doesn't go to this door at all. That it goes to another lock entirely.
Where?
That's the frustrating part, said Murray.
He retrieved the key and hung it back on the wall. It swung gently, the edges gleaming in the light.
It's been 300 years, and we still haven't got a clue.
10. Murray pulled the velvet curtain shut, then led the way back through the ancient sofa to the Hall of Records. The golden lights and shining mirrors were dazzling after the dusty sunbeams of Le Petit Salon. Hang on a second, I said, swatting cobwebs off my pajamas as Murray reset the pillow. How does a group that's only kids afford all this?
All what?
All this! I flapped a hand at the mirrors and lamps and columns of glossy marble. I get that it's been built up over hundreds of years, but this place must be pretty expensive to maintain.
You're good at spotting problems, aren't you? Murray said. The answer's pretty simple. Have you ever sat down on a sofa with change in your pocket?
Yeah.
And have you ever stood up and realized it was gone?
Yeah.
And have you ever searched the cushions and not been able to find it?
Yeah.
Well, guess where a lot of it ends up.
The strange metallic clinking coming from behind the garage door-sized wall pillow danced through my mind.
Here?
Here.
I'll show you the collection for it later, if there's time. Come on, we'd better get back.
But how does...
Later, really. We have to go.
As we walked up the hall, familiar names on the plaques kept catching my eye. Frida Kahlo, Leonard Nimoy, Emily Dickinson, Alex Trebek.
Alex Trebek? I said, stopping at a blue and white pillow with Peter Rabbit hopping across it.
Murray looked over.
What about him?
Isn't he the one from that TV show?
Yep. He came through here when he was our age, and now he's one of the most famous Canadians ever.
Alex Trebek is Canadian?
A lot of people are, Maggie.
Murray started up the hall again.
So now you see, he said, returning to his tour guide voice. Why it's so important we make sure new members deserve to join our group. Nefafa is one of the most exclusive secret societies in the world, and you'll need to prove that you and your network are worthy to join.
How do we prove it? I asked as we pushed past the tapestry into the hub. Murray attempted a bobby wink over his shoulder.
That's for Noriko to tell you.
We returned to the platform, where Noriko, Misha, and Ben stood around the table, studying a large sheet of paper spread open between them. Noriko jumped and rolled it up hastily as we approached, but not before I thought I recognized the lumpy shape sketched across it.
Wait, wasn't that Camp Pillow Fort? I said. Is that a map of our network?
Three pairs of silver sunglasses turned in my direction. Murray nudged me and shook his head. I ignored him.
It looked funny, I pressed on. We've got a map, too, and the shape the forts make when you draw them together is different. Yours had extra lumps. Can I see it again?
Ben turned to Misha, who turned to Noriko.
Let's deal with our business first, she said. We can talk about other issues later.
They all sat down, and Murray directed me to a new chair tucked beside his. I scooched in. It felt right, sitting at the table with the other kids in charge. They might have had more experience, but I ran a network, too, just like they did. When it came down to it, we were equals.
Noriko folded her hands.
So, Maggie Hetzker, she said, if Murray has done his job, you should now have some idea what Nafafa is all about. This is a historic organization with a grand history, and it is our duty to protect its strength and integrity for the fort builders who will come after us. They, after all, will be our judges, and we cannot let them down.
She sounded exactly like Murray doing his tour guide voice. The other council members were nodding.
As I said before, your network has come together unusually quickly. Now it's time to make things official. So, as Nafafa applicants, you and the other members of Camp Pillow Fort are hereby forbidden from 1. Forging new links, 2. Adding new forts, and 3. Passing linked fort information to a single other person until your admission into the Alliance has been approved.
I felt my mouth fall open. So much for being equals.
What?
I said.
But Camp Pillow Fort is mine. I mean, mine and Abby's. What makes you think you can tell us what to do with our own personal network?
Hey, easy, said Misha. This is how it's been done for centuries, and it's for your own good. You wouldn't be able to cope with more links right now anyway.
We totally could.
No, you totally couldn't. Misha shook her head, smiling. I know you think that, but trust me, I manage 64 links in my network. That's on top of school and friends and everything else.
Like Sprinkles the Puppy. Piped up Murray.
Like Sprinkles the Puppy, continued Misha.
And it's a ton of work, even with 4 years of experience. It's really better to start slow.
Misha's correct, Ben said.
You're hopelessly behind everyone here, so you should just do as you're told. It's not like you have a choice anyway. Our rules must be followed.
I scowled at him and at his overalls. This kid sure was good at getting under my skin. Why was he always so rude? And for that matter, what was a little boy like him doing on the council in the first place?
Okay, how old are you anyway, Ben? I asked impulsively. Aren't you kind of young to be sitting at the big kids' table?
Misha threw back her head and laughed. Murray bopped me under the table with his foot. Ben smiled. It wasn't particularly friendly.
I'm 9, he said. I'm the youngest council member ever. And someday I'll be the youngest head of council, too.
Maybe, buddy, maybe, said Noriko. She turned to me.
Ben's a bit of a special case.
If you say so, I said. But hey, Murray said my group was a special case, too. Does that mean I get some say about the rules?
There were 3 seconds of silence. Then... Way to give it away, Murray!
We agreed not to say anything.
That is completely against regulations.
Ben was on his feet, waving his clipboard.
You could be kicked off the council for that.
Hey, 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 said Murray, holding up his hands and looking alarmed.
Easy with the regulations, eh? All I said was their group is a special case. I didn't give away anything important. Telling them they're a special case is plenty, said Ben.
He rounded on Noriko.
What are you going to do about this?
Noriko tilted her head, considering. Then shrugged.
Nothing. If Murray only mentioned the situation to Maggie Hetzker, I don't think it's a disciplinary matter.
Thank you, said Murray. Ben, sit down.
This is completely ridiculous,
Ben yelled, plonking down in his chair.
I move for a special vote to throw Murray and Noriko off the council.
Now who's being ridiculous? Said Noriko.
You are!
Ben sounded like he was on the verge of a tantrum. Hey, don't talk to Noriko like that, said Misha. Especially not in front of guests.
Maggie Hetzker is much more than a guest, objected Murray.
Suddenly, everyone was talking at once, waving their hands and pointing dramatically across the table. It was turning into a full-blown ruckus when one of the bulbs in the chandelier above us blew with a sharp, pinging pop.
Bulb!
Cried a muffled voice from the maintenance crew over our heads. A tiny shower of glass shards tinkled down behind Ben's chair. The council members all looked up.
Bulb!
They shouted in unison. The background hum of voices filling the hub stopped abruptly. In the silence, Noriko raised her hands over her head and clapped three times. I glanced around. Every eye in the place was fixed on the chandelier.
Way to go, kid!
Yelled every last person in the hub except for me.
Keep it up! Have fun!
Noriko clapped again, and the talk and chatter returned as everyone went back to what they were doing.
So, said Noriko, turning to me, as I was saying, in addition to freezing your network...
Wait, I said. What just happened? Noriko frowned.
Please don't interrupt, Maggie Hetzker. We've had enough of that for one day.
But what was that chant thing you all just did?
Oh, that. There's a tradition that every time a bulb burns out in the Nefafa chandelier, a kid somewhere in North America has just built their first pillow fort. That means they might discover linking and end up here someday. So we mark the moment to wish them well.
I look up at the chandelier. Really? That was pretty out there, even for me. Yes, really, said Misha. Now will everyone please let Noriko give the instructions so we can get this meeting over with?
Thank you, Misha, said Noriko. So, Maggie Hetzker, in addition to freezing Camp Pillowfort, there is one important thing you need to do before you and your network can be accepted as members of Nefafa.
You must use your forts. She paused dramatically, her sunglasses glinting in the golden light.
To perform a good deed.
I blinked.
I'm sorry? You must use your forts to perform a good deed, repeated Noriko. A very good deed. And you have exactly 3 days to do it.
I stared at Noriko for a full 5 seconds before I realized she must be joking. Weird lighting fixture traditions or not, these just didn't seem like the sort of kids who would run their club like a fairy tale. I burst out laughing.
Ha!
I said. That's hilarious. What, are we supposed to give a wandering old woman shelter for the night? Or defeat the evil advisor to the Empress? Or rescue a cursed prince who's been turned into a washing machine that makes everything washed in it turn to gold, and the only way to save him is to track down his matching dryer and decipher the counterspell written in code on the lint trap?
I made a mental note to actually remember that one for later.
I mean, you're totally kidding, right?
4 silent faces told me they weren't.
Oh, cucumber casserole. Way to go, Maggie. Wow, okay. I tugged at my pajamas.
So, what do you want us to do? That's up to you and your network, said Noriko. Coming up with a quality good deed is part of the test. We want to know you can think of others and use the powers of the forts for good. We'll judge your efforts and vote, and if we approve, you'll be in.
And if you don't approve? I asked.
What happens then? If you don't meet our expectations, then you are officially declared a rogue network, and we attack and shut you down.
She spoke so calmly, so matter-of-factly, that I almost missed it. Wait, attack? I said as the news reached my brain. What sort of attack?
Parental, said Noriko. The most effective kind. Break our rules or fail to meet our expectations, and we'll let kids loose in your house. Kids who will eat your food, mark up your floors, track dirt on your carpets, leave the cap off the toothpaste, unmake your bed, hide your family's favorite things in your fort, and generally do everything they can to make sure you get in trouble. There's no way to prove it wasn't you. And 9 times out of 10, it results in the demolition of the fort and loss of fort-building privileges forever.
I stared at her. The fairy tale had become a gangster movie. I looked over at Murray, but his eyes were fixed on the table. That's horrible, I said. Do I even want to know what you do the 1 time out of 10 it doesn't work?
In those cases, we remove the causal element ourselves, said Ben. His unfriendly smile was back.
The casual what now?
The causal element,
he said, tapping out each syllable on his clipboard.
The thing with a scrap of the first sofa in it that makes your network work? For you, that means the patchwork scarf.
My scarf? I said, appalled. But Abby made that for me. You can't just steal my things. We know, said Misha.
That's why removing the causal element is only used as a last resort. We don't really want to take someone else's things, but if it's a choice between that and endangering the entire alliance, well, we kind of have to.
Exactly. Noriko nodded. And Ben is correct, Maggie Hetzker. You don't have a choice about the good deed test. If you refuse to take it, we'll declare you a rogue network and shut you down right here. The only way you can keep your links is to do what we say and pass the test. Maybe that seems unfair now, but the benefits of Nefafa membership outweigh any unfairness by 1,000 to 1. In the end, we're doing you a huge favor by asking you to join.
I looked around at them. After that tour, I'd been ready to sign up in a heartbeat so Abby and I could go all real-life secret agent on those museums and palaces and secret archives. But in just the last few minutes, I'd been insulted, ordered around, and threatened. And I wasn't totally sold on the idea of merging my very own personal pillow fort network with a group of kids like that. Then again, if it came down to either joining Nefafa or losing the links forever, well, Noriko was right. I really didn't have a choice. Abby would always be next door, but losing Uncle Joe and Alaska? Losing all that space and freedom when we'd only just found our way there? That was definitely not an option.
It looks like you've got a lot to think about, said Noriko, eyeing me.
Why don't we assume for now that you're agreeing to the test, and you can go home and talk it over with your network? It's not really such a big deal, doing one good deed. Talk it over with my network, I said. Right. What would Abby say to all this? Old Abby would have loved the woolly mammoths and famous pillows and palace doors and missing keys. But what if new Abby didn't? Or, hey, even worse, what do I do if Abby doesn't believe me? I said. Murray tilted his head.
Why wouldn't she? You're best friends, right?
Obviously, I said. But she's not exactly the same as she was before she went away to camp. I don't know if I can guarantee I'll be able to convince her. It felt weird to be talking about it with them, but there was too much at stake here not to bring up potential problems while I had the chance. Don't worry, said Misha. You'll be fine. I had the same trouble with some friends back when I joined. We'll help if you need it. Noriko got to her feet, and everyone else did the same. It looked like the meeting was over.
Goodbye, Maggie Hetzker, Noriko said, reaching across the table and shaking my hand. Thanks for coming. Carolina will take you home.
I jumped as Carolina appeared at my elbow. Then I shook hands with Misha, who smiled encouragingly, and Murray, who turned pink again. Ben hugged his clipboard to his chest and gave me a curt nod. Carolina and I set off down the steps, but I only made it a few feet before I stopped and turned back, the one big question I'd been dying to ask since the beginning tumbling out before I could stop myself. Hey, so why exactly are you all wearing silver sunglasses?
Everyone froze. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Carolina put a hand over her mouth. There was a very uncomfortable silence.
Because, Maggie Hetzker,
said Noriko, drawing herself up to her full height.